This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Prison Fellowship. Help send a child of a prisoner to Angel Tree Summer Camp with a gift of any amount. Call 855-512-6435 or go to janetmefford.com and click on the Angel Tree banner. Thank you.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, for many years now, American evangelicals have been one of the most reliable bases of support for the nation of Israel. For some, the support is eschatological. For others, it's about supporting the only democracy in the Middle East against the encroachment of Islam. And many Christians also support Israel for both reasons. And yet lately, we are seeing more and more younger, self-styled, progressive evangelicals not supporting Israel the way their forebears did, and even embracing some versions of anti-Semitism, which we've seen at the anti-Israel gatherings like the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference in Bethlehem. Why are we seeing this turning on Israel, and why is it so important for Christians to continue to support Israel? We're going to tackle this subject today with Dr. Thomas Ice, Executive Director of the Pre-Trib Research Center, which he founded in 1994 with Dr. Tim LaHaye. He is the co-author of over 30 books, served as a pastor for 17 years, and today we'll be talking about his newest, The Case for Zionism, Why Christians Should Support Israel. Dr. Ice, it's wonderful to have you here. Welcome.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Thank you. You know, this is very interesting to me. When I was reading through your book, you mentioned this Christ at the Checkpoint Conference that you attended last year. I've been covering this conference for the last few years and been horrified by some of what I've heard coming out of that. And I wonder what you can tell us about the trend you're seeing in Christians, American Christians, and some even in American church leadership supporting this movement of being anti-Semitic and anti-Israel when we do have such a rich history of Christians supporting Israel.
Well, I think that it's because the younger generation, frankly, is not as into the Bible as previous evangelical generations have. And they have picked up this idea of social activism, I think, from the non-Christian culture.
Yep.
And what does a non-Christian culture emphasize? They emphasize, all these leftist issues like supporting poor ancient Palestinians, you know, who were founded in 1964. And therefore, they're viewed as the social underdogs and all of that. That fits right into the multiculturalism and all the stuff they're learning at school.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. And I'm curious to ask you, since you were at this conference before, what sorts of things did you hear coming out of the speakers, the people who were gathered there? What do Christians back home need to know about what these folks are saying?
Well, first of all, a lot of the professors at Bethlehem Bible College that sponsors this, you know, have degrees from the United States, like Westminster Seminary, Trinity Seminary, and, you know, they were very well educated with American, European degrees.
Yep.
And they blame Christian Zionists for the problems, when obviously the problems that they talked a little bit about it, but rarely talked about it, was the Islamic terrorism
right.
in their midst.
Right.
And I think that keeps a lot of them from opening their eyes and talking. So those who favor bashing Christians for their support of Israel, and they see that as the deciding factor in the United States, for example, then they blame us as the deciders that push us over the edge to support Israel.
Right. Now, when we talk about the word Zionism, this is such an important thing to clarify, because sometimes you'll hear the word mischaracterized and caricatured. So what do you need to clear up about what Christian Zionism really is? That's mainly, I think, a good place to start, just the mere definition of what Zionism really is.
Well, first of all, in the Bible, it's used over 160 times in the Old and New Testament, and it's a term that refers basically to Jerusalem and the nation of Israel on occasion. And it originally referred to David, where David lived, his house across from the Temple Mount area. And it's an optimistic, forward-looking term There's so many passages that talk about Zion is the term that's used when they think of Israel back in her land in a right relationship with God. And so that's probably why the political founders in the late 1800s picked the term Zionism. And I think it just refers to anybody that believes Israel, you know, has a right to their homeland there in so-called Palestine.
Right. Now, when you look at these Christian Palestinians, as you like to say, not even the people who live there in Israel who would call themselves Palestinians, but this whole trend of Christian Palestinianism and the people who are objecting to Zionism, what is the crux of their argument? Why do they think that Zionism, as you mentioned, which is mentioned so many times in the Word of God, is problematic?
Well, because they believe that the church has forever replaced Israel. In fact, the leader of the conference had just finished a PhD dissertation, I think at Westminster, on, that viewpoint of teaching that the church, you know, and this is very popular coming out of people like N.T. Wright,
yep.
who a lot of evangelicals just swoon over,
yep.
That Jesus fulfills the land promises. Even though there's not one syllable in the New Testament that says anything like that, and so they come in with this abstract theology, and they say God's not just interested in this little piece of land on the Levant, but he's interested in the whole world, and Jesus fulfills it, and they go off on the Jesus thing there, you know?
Yeah.
And the
yep.
problem is the Apostle Paul states specifically in Romans 11 that Israel has a future and that they're going to wake up one day during the tribulation and realize that Jesus is their Messiah and God's going to have even greater blessings for the Gentiles as well.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, this replacement theology has really found a firm footing in a lot of circles within American evangelicalism. So how do we respond when we are looking at the Word of God and we see, as you've mentioned in Romans 11, that's one passage that we could focus upon, where God does have a future for Israel? Why should that matter for Christians? In other words, what does that have to do with what you are doing, making the case for why Christians should support Israel?
Well, you know, God has so much in the Bible about Israel. Next to God himself, probably Israel is the most frequently mentioned subject in the Bible.
Yeah.
And, you don't want to get that wrong. And God apparently thought it was important enough. He has endless chapters, in the Bible talking about Israel. I would argue his whole plan revolves around Israel. And Israel was called to be a priestly nation. They were called to be the vehicle through whom the Messiah comes. They were called to be the ones to give us Scripture. And God called them to set them apart from the nation so that they could represent him. Of course, they failed. But he also called them to be a light to the nations. And I believe in the future, the 144,000 Jewish evangelists are going to fulfill even that as they preach the gospel to the whole world during the tribulation period. And so God is using Israel as his chosen people, and in a sense, they're, a microcosm of humanity. I believe if he had chosen anybody else because of their fallen, sinful nature, we all would have responded in a similar way to Israel. And it's only because of God's grace at the end of the story that Israel is converted, and that's kind of what happens with us as well in the New Testament.
Right. And you think about the references, too, to the fact that we as Gentiles have been grafted in, the references to, obviously God is not done with Israel. And you think about this, that having been grafted in really kind of points out the importance of remembering that the Jews were God's people first and that there is a future for Israel, as we see in the book of Revelation, clearly.
Yeah, they're mentioned all over the book of Revelation. But once again, if you believe, if you have a priori belief that the church takes over Israel, then you don't continue to exercise a literal hermeneutic. Literal hermeneutic means to interpret based on what the text says.
Right.
If it says Israel, it means Israel. And
right.
Allegorization is where you bring an idea from outside the text and impose it. And that's what's happening.
Yes.
And yet, for some reason, there's a major shift among evangelicals who are historically known as people who believe in the biblical text. And that's why you had, all the way back in the post-Reformation era, people beginning to see that Israel had a future.
I'll tell you what, we're going to pick up this discussion on the other side of the break. Dr. Thomas Ice with us. The Case for Zionism is his book. We'll return right after this.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
Here are some of the topics I deal with in my book, Feisty and Feminine, A Rallying Cry for Conservative Women. The devaluation of women, sexual assault in politics, marriage intolerance, abortion and the sanctity of human life, the real war against women, the rise of Islamic extremism, and why Israel matters. Now, more than ever, there is a need for thoughtful, compelling conservative women to boldly affirm the conservative principles of our biblical worldview. We all need to equip ourselves with the language necessary to pierce the hearts and minds of our contemporaries and our young women. Feisty and Feminine is designed to help you do just that. I hope you take the time to read it.
Penny Nance's latest book, Feisty and Feminine, empowers Christian women to engage the culture, and it's our gift to thank you for your donation today. Request yours at CapitolHillBrief.org. That's CapitolHillBrief.org. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. You've heard me tell you about Prison Fellowship's wonderful Angel Tree Christmas program, and many of you have generously donated so a child of a prisoner could hear the gospel and receive a Christmas gift in the name of their parent. But help for these kids doesn't stop there. Angel Tree summer camps help even more kids hear about Jesus and experience the love of God in an environment of safety and fun. With your help, we'd like to send 38 children to Christian summer camp this year on an Angel Tree scholarship. Now, we never ask for donations for Janet Mefford today, but sometimes we do ask you to help support other ministries that we believe in. So please help change a life this summer through Angel Tree Summer Camps. A donation of any amount would be greatly appreciated. Just call now, 855-512-6435. That's 855-512-6435. Or there's an Angel Tree banner with a donate button at janetmefford.com. Call now, 855-512-6435. We are back on Janet Mefford today. Thanks for joining us. We have seen all sorts of movements around the world, the increase of anti-Semitism and all of the dangers that surround the nation of Israel. It seems to be getting worse in the last several years, and Israel really is under fire. It has been since its reformation back in 1948, but of course the Bible has much to say about the nation of Israel all the way back to the very beginning, and yet we see a lot of Christians today moving away from support for Israel. It's a very strange phenomenon considering the history of the church and its support for Israel for quite a long time. And Dr. Thomas Ice is joining us talking about his book called The Case for Zionism, Why Christians Should Support Israel. And this is something, Dr. Ice, you have mentioned, you were talking about some of the modern leaders who are saying that there is no more place for Israel and you know, we need to interpret the Bible allegorically. Really, alongside this, I think it's important to point out that there has been a real loss of interest in my lifetime in seeing Christians interested in even studying Bible prophecy. Would you agree with that, or do you see a different trend?
Yes, especially among seminary graduates and the pastors and others. I see a pretty strong interest still among laymen, and that's why they go off and start Sunday school classes and, you know, have their own websites and all of this.
Right.
It's the leadership among evangelicals that has somehow lost it. You know, back 30 years ago, for example, when Christians started getting more involved with politics, maybe that was 40 years ago. Yes, it was. And Israel was a big part of being involved in politics.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be slipping because that was a political issue that you knew the Bible spoke to, and you knew what God thought of that.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. And we're not seeing as much of it, especially in the leadership, as you've said. Increasingly, we're seeing some leadership going in the opposite direction, which does affect the church. But let's go back to some of these basic issues. You cover this in your book, talking about modern Israel's right to the land. And you also talk about modern Israel's legal right to the land. Can you bring us up to speed on why we should understand the right of Israel to have the land that it has?
Yeah, because we often see these guys on TV saying that Israel's occupying the land and they're violating international law and all that, and nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, you talk about false news stories. This has been going on for years.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is that Israel has all the legal rights to the land. And I have a friend named Jacques Gauthier. He's an international lawyer from Toronto, and he did a PhD dissertation, took him 20 years at University of Geneva in Switzerland. And he demonstrated that Israel has all the legal right to the land, going back to what's called the San Remo Conference, right after World War One in April of 1920. And they gave Israel, based on, let me back up a moment. International law is not based on UN resolutions.
Right.
It's based on agreements and treaties that people make. And Israel was given the land after World War One. Most people are shocked to hear that. And Great Britain was to be the overseer to see them become a nation. And they had in the language, like a father oversees a son. Now, Britain did that, for example, with Mesopotamia and Iraq in the 1930s became countries. France did it with Lebanon and Syria, and around in the 1930s, they both became independent countries. And Great Britain was supposed to do this with Israel, or Palestine, as they called it. But a number of things, you had a shift in 1922 when a different British government came in that were hostile toward Israel, and secondly, Arab terrorism arose.
Right.
The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Al Husseini, who was Arafat's uncle, started in 1920 Arab terrorism, and that continued to grow, and a lot of people are surprised to hear that from 1935 to 1938, there was actually a civil war in Palestine between the British, Israel, and the Arabs. 108,000 people were killed, and that kind of put things on the back burner, and it wasn't until after the Holocaust that sympathy had arisen for the Jewish people that gave them their real opportunity to become a nation.
Interesting. You're right. I mean, I had not heard that detail before, so that is fascinating. So those people who are trying to say that this is a matter of occupation, I mean, you think of that horrible UN resolution that came out, what was it, December of last year, that was basically saying it was illegal for Israel to be doing what it was doing. These things were settled, but for a lot of people now it doesn't matter. And I wonder how much that just ties into sheer anti-Semitism.
Well, of course, we learn from Revelation 12, as I point out in our book, that anti-Semitism is satanic. You know, all racism is bad, but this is something that's the struggle between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman, going all the way back to Genesis 3:15. And that's why Israel is important. And the Bible is so clear, you know, on what, you know, God says. That's why they have to allegorize and become sophist, if you will, at points to try to argue that the church has somehow replaced Israel and Israel doesn't have a future. Or as some say, that the modern state of Israel is no more biblically significant than Japan or China or Germany or any other country is. You know, I've read statements like that. It's crazy.
Good grief. Well, remind people a little bit, or those who are not as familiar with some of the passages, you know, dealing with the end times and dealing with the return of Christ and so forth. What is the significance of the reformation of Israel as it pertains to the return of Christ?
The 70th week of Daniel has not yet been fulfilled as prophesied in Daniel 9:24-27. And the verse 24 says there's six things that will happen when the 70 weeks of Daniel are completed. And basically it means that the apostasy or Israel's sin will be finished and she'll be in the time of millennial blessing and prophecy will have been fulfilled. And none of that had happened. That's why in verse 26 of Daniel 9, it says that after the 69 weeks of year, Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. So he was cut off. He was killed 4 days after the 69 weeks of years were fulfilled when he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey. And then he had nothing, none of those six items that were mentioned in verse 24. And that's why you have the 70th week in which Israel will have a covenant made with it, with the revived Roman emperor coming out of probably the EU eventually. And so Israel has to be in the land in unbelief, actually, in order to get saved. I always tell people, because a lot of people say, well, they're just a bunch of unbelievers and God haters in Israel. Well, you know, that's true. There are many over there. But the fact of the matter is, in order to become a believer, you have to be an unbeliever. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right. As we all were.
As we all were. And Israel is over there. There's probably 20, 30,000 Bible-believing Christians over there. But nevertheless, that's the point of the 70th week of Daniel. So they have to be in the land. They have to be in control of Jerusalem. And obviously they're going to be in control of the Temple Mount because it's going to be rebuilt at some point in the future.
That's right.
So you have all of these things that are prophesied to take place, and it looks like we're moving in that direction.
Right, which is always on the minds of people I talk to. Are we in the last days? Are we in the end times? Are we going to see all of these events unfold? So what about the future of Israel? You reference, for example, Revelation chapter 12 and all all that's in there about the dragon and the woman and all the rest. And I know this can be a long discussion about eschatology, but basically, when we look at the future of Israel as the Bible outlines it, what can we expect once we do see the 70th week upon us?
Zechariah 13, 8, and 9 says two-thirds of the Jewish people are going to be removed. In other words, they're going to be, Ezekiel chapter 20 puts it this way, the rebel, the unbelieving, non-elect Jewish people will be killed or removed at some point during the tribulation, and the one-third of the Jewish people will be saved and be delivered. And so that is what we can expect, that until the rapture occurs, which removes the church age, and that's the argument for the preacher of rapture, is you have to have the church removed, because during the church age, Jew and Gentile believers are co-equal in Christ. Mm-hmm. But if God's going to fulfill all the promises literally to Israel in the Old Testament, then you have to have Israel be the vehicle through which he is going to work, and that's what's going to be the case there in that 70th week of Daniel, and then they're going to fulfill their promises of being the head over all the nations during the 1,000-year millennium. And so with that answer, I forgot your question.
I said, now, what can we expect as far as the future of Israel once this 70th week is upon us that you referenced in Daniel 9? What should Christians be looking for in terms of God's plan for Israel?
Yeah, that increasingly, all the world's going to turn against Israel, and she's going to make that covenant for protection with the revived Roman Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And so we see that process underway now. And just think what the rapture will do as far as support for Israel. Mm-hmm. It'll be almost non-existent once that occurs. And therefore, that covenant's going to be made. Isaiah calls it the covenant with death. And it's going to lead to fulfillment of things that we've already talked about, the second coming of Christ. And the second coming of Christ is a rescue event to rescue Israel. In fact, the condition for the second coming is that the Jews have to recognize that Jesus is the Messiah and confess him. And that's what Paul's talking about, part of Romans 10, where he says, how shall they call on him whom they haven't believed?
Exactly.
You know, how shall they believe without, et cetera.
Exactly. Well, the wonderful book, The Case for Zionism, Why Christians Should Support Israel, Dr. Thomas Ice joining us. So nice to have you here. Thank you, Dr. Ice. God bless you.
Thank you, Janet.
This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Prison Fellowship. Help send a child of a prisoner to Angel Tree Summer Camp with a gift of any amount. Call 855-512-6435 or go to janetmefford.com and click on the Angel Tree banner. Thank you. Welcome back to Janet Meffer today. Well, there's nothing like going to Christian summer camp. I know I loved going to camp when I was a kid. We'd have campfires, we'd go swimming, and best of all, we'd learn about Jesus and how to grow in our faith in Him. Now, we've been telling you recently about a wonderful opportunity we have right now to help the children of incarcerated parents have that same experience. It's called Angel Tree Camping. And through your generosity, Angel Tree children can get the opportunity to attend a Christian summer camp and strengthen their relationship with the Lord. Now, here at Janet Meffer today, we're wanting to send 38 children who have a mom or a dad in prison to Christian summer camp. The cost is $200 per child, but anything you're able to donate today will help. $10, $25, $50. The amount is not important. The generosity of your heart is what we care about. And the number to call is 855-512-6435, or you can go to janetmeffer.com and click on the Angel Tree Camping banner. Well, we're going to find out more now from Jennifer Lowry, who is Program Manager of Angel Tree Camping and Mentoring at Prison Fellowship, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about it. Jennifer, thank you for being with us today. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be on the show.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit more about Angel Tree Camping. I gave kind of a little brief synopsis there, but certainly you're the expert and can kind of fill in the holes for us.
Absolutely. Angel Tree Camping can happen in a couple of different ways. Many camps that we partner with have one special week that's just for prisoners' kids, and this can be so impactful because it gives kids an opportunity for them to get away in an environment that's safe and where the counselors are going to be understanding and expecting kind of the background that they're coming from or some issues that they may be experiencing. And they get a chance to both be kids at the same time as they can process their lives at home. And then they can also get a chance to spend more time really contemplating who Jesus is.
Good. That's great. You know, and a lot of people are familiar, obviously, with Angel Tree at Christmas time. And we always have a great campaign with kids who have a mom or dad in prison and we get them gifts. And listeners have been so generous. What about the importance of camp? Why camp in the summertime? This is opposite end of the calendar here for these kids. But what have you found to be the importance of sending these Angel Tree kids to Christian summer camp?
Well, one of the things that is at the heart of Angel Tree is introducing kids to Jesus Christ, because we believe that it's through knowing Him that your life changes and that you can find a future that is the one that God has for you.
Right.
And I know in my life personally, I found that at camp. And we know too that camp is a particularly fertile ground for kids to get away and unplug and to hear the word, to hear about Jesus, and then also to have a chance to ask questions and talk with people over a longer period of time. A lot of times the gift opens up the door for that conversation,
yes.
But at Christmas you may not have time or may not have the relationship built that would allow you to talk with a child and really, you know, would allow them to trust you enough to interact with you in that way. And camp is one of those places where you dive in and you're surrounded by love and you're with other kids and you're having fun and you're also in God's nature. You're able to see what He's done.
Yes.
With trees and sometimes kids who are in an urban environment have like never been out in the country.
Right.
So they've never seen an actual cow or a horse in real life. They are freaked out a little bit by the bugs sometimes. Because
as we all are.
As we all are. They're like, wait a minute, there are spiders here. But
yeah.
They quickly get over that. And they just, you know, it's awe-inspiring when you get out and you see the sky away from all of the light pollution.
Yeah.
And you can see the stars. And that, you know, God says that His creation makes us aware of who He is.
Yeah.
And when kids have a chance to get away and actually look up and see the stars,
yeah.
They have an opportunity to ask questions, and those questions can lead them to Jesus.
Well, it is so important. You're bringing back so many great memories for me as you're talking, Jennifer, about camp, and I'm remembering all of those moments. Well, the other thing that I remember from camp that was so significant for me was being able to bond with other adults, my counselors, for example. And we'd go back year after year, and the same counselors would be there. And they were really great spiritual mentors for me, and had such a big impact on me. And I think that's important for kids, too, to have mentors beyond mom and dad. And, of course, in the case of kids who have mom or dad in prison, it's even more vital.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that is exactly my experience with camp, which, you know, I don't know where I would be if I had not had that. And that's why we really want churches to get the idea that, that Angel Tree is not just about Christmas, but it's an opportunity to connect with kids year-round. And sometimes even the church that serves them at Christmas could send counselors and build that relationship and be able to have them come home and be somewhere where they are connected with the body of Christ.
Right.
But we see a number of our Angel Tree camps that stay connected. Their counselors make an effort to reach out to kids after camp is over. Some camps that we work with have retreat weekends to invite former campers to come back. So there are just all kinds of ways for kids to develop relationships. And one thing we know about resilience with kids is that when you may have really hard life circumstances, but sometimes all it takes is one exterior caring adult to care about you, even for a little bit of time, even a time as short as a week, can make a lifetime impact.
You're right about that. Well, and we often hear about some of the statistics for these kids and how much more likely they are to end up in the same cycle of their parents. Can you speak to that issue, too, on how this summer camp program will help get in the way of those statistics and give the kids a better road to get on and hopefully find the Lord and be able to live lives that are diametrically opposed to the lives that their mom or dad have lived?
Absolutely. There are some statistics that show that kids are 2 to 3 times more likely to follow their parents into prison, although there's not a whole lot of solid research on the cause and effect there. But one thing that we do know for sure is that having a parent incarcerated is an adverse childhood experience. It's something that can definitely impact kids' health and their emotional well-being and their success in school and their success in building families when they become adults. And all of those things can be, you know, mitigated by people like your listeners stepping up and giving them a chance to develop relationships with some folks who can encourage the caregiver, you know, support what the caregiver is already trying to teach their kids. Because the moms and dads and grandparents who are at home want those kids to grow up to have great lives.
Yeah.
And to, you know, to flourish. And it just sometimes takes a little bit of an extra support and love and push to show kids a different path. I know in my life, you know, we were talking about mentors that you met at camp. One of my mentors was just that. She was the mom of a classmate who invited me to camp. And I spent a lot of time at their house outside of camp, and I watched her parent. I watched how they interacted with their kids. And I don't know if she knows how much I watched her. But, you know, my home life was not calm. And to step into a home where Jesus was at the center and where there was a husband and a wife who were in love with each other, who respected each other and who respected and loved their children, and who, you know, I watched how she disciplined them when they got in trouble, and I was like, they aren't yelling. It's it's really nice.
Yeah.
But that gave me some hope, and that gave me a model of something to look at and say, hey, I can have a family that looks like that.
That's right. Yes, it gives you some hope. It gives you another picture of a family than what you might have seen otherwise. And I mean, this is so important, as you've mentioned here, Jennifer, about 2 to 3 times more likelihood for these kids to follow mom or dad into prison. And those are terrible statistics. And I know our listeners have been so generous and so kind toward these Angel Tree kids at Christmas. And we would encourage you, if you're listening and your heart is touched and you'd like to be a part of sending some of these children of incarcerated parents to Christian summer camp, a donation of any amount will help. We're trying to send 38 children to camp. Call 855-512-6435, or you can go to janetmefford.com and click on the Angel Tree Camping banner. Again, any amount you can give today will help a child who needs to know the Lord Jesus Christ. This is a great way of doing it. Well, Jennifer Lowry from Angel Tree Camping, so good to talk to you. Thank you very, very much for what you do.
Oh, thank you for giving us an opportunity to share this with your listeners.
Absolutely. Take care, and thanks for being with us, and we'll be back.
Do you ever feel like it's your job to hold everything or everyone together? that if you don't act a certain way or do all the right things, other people or your circumstances will just fall apart? This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. Sometimes messages from our past or even from our culture tell us that we have to hold everything together, that somehow we can control how other people feel and respond, or that we can control every detail of our lives. That's a heavy burden that we were never meant to carry. Instead, Jesus tells us that He holds everything together and His burden is light. So if you're feeling stressed and burdened today, ask God to show you what burden you're carrying that's not yours to carry. Allow Him to hold all things and people together in your life. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeannieNigro.com. That's jeannienigro.com.
Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Has your health care become a burden? Are you worried about being stuck for another year and wondering what your options are? Liberty HealthShare could be the solution to your problem. Open enrollment is here, and it could be your chance to free yourself from insurance. Take this opportunity and join Liberty HealthShare. You can finally be in control and have freedom when it comes to your health care. Liberty HealthShare offers an entirely open network, which means you choose your doctors and you choose your hospital. Liberty HealthShare offers freedom from insurance, meaning no related tax penalties. To find out how you can easily make the change, call Liberty HealthShare today at 855-585-4237. That's 855-585-4237. Or visit their website at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Or call 855-585-4237. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. This hour brought to you by CBN Documentaries, out with a new film, In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem. For 6 days in 1967, surrounded by enemies on all sides, Israel stood alone fighting for survival. In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, in select theaters for a one-night event tonight, Tuesday, May 23rd. Theater and ticket information available at inourhands1967.com. I have been watching with great interest what has been going on over at CNN for quite a while, especially during the campaign and all of the WikiLeaks reveals about the treachery that went on behind the scenes and the extent to which CNN has been a mouthpiece for the Democratic National Committee and all of that embarrassing stuff that came out that I rejoiced over and a lot of Americans rejoiced over simply because it was shining a light on a very dark place and revealing that journalism is not the top principle over at CNN. It's just political do-gooding for the DNC. And this is good for Americans to know because we need to be aware of the fact that reporters in many, many cases are hopelessly compromised and not at all interested in doing fair, objective reporting, which is what that profession ought to be. So I came across with interest this story, and I thought to myself, every time I think CNN has hit a new low, it goes lower. And in this case, it involved going to an elementary school. Now, you might think, what's wrong with going to an elementary school? Nothing. Nothing is wrong with going to an elementary school. You go to an elementary school and you cover a story about a neat program or some kind of school event that was unique or some kind of charity event for a teacher who has cancer and the kids all cut their hair off and give it to the teacher. Something like that. There's no problem with that. Great human interest story. Great sort of feel-good feature story that can uplift viewers. Yeah, that's not what they did here. CNN instead went to Monroe County, Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton finished within a point of one another during the presidential election. And they went to an elementary school called Swiftwater and talked to a bunch of nine-year-olds about their opinions of Donald Trump. Now, why in the world would CNN want to go to an elementary school and talk to third graders? I don't know what you were like in third grade, but I didn't know much about politics in third grade. The only thing I knew was what my parents talked about, and I was pretty politically interested, even as a nine-year-old, but certainly not qualified to comment on a major cable network, and neither were these kids. God love them. They were beautiful, and they were sweet, and they were cute. But I don't know what in the world CNN was doing. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I do know what they were doing because you see what they're doing as you hear this audio. And I'm going to play it for you right now. Listen to cut one.
And we are sitting here with some of the third graders at Swiftwater Elementary. Are you ready to talk about President Trump?
Yes!
What do you think Donald Trump and his campaign are being investigated about?
I think he's being investigated about, like, how he got elected as president a little bit, and then if he's working with the Russians or not.
They're investigating him because to see if Russia hacked into the campaign to give him more votes.
They maybe just don't like him, so they're just trying to make up a case.
I feel like it would be good to know whether something like that would be real or not. Like if they're investigating him, like if he ate a sandwich or not.
Yeah, the sandwich investigation would not be popular. That'd be a waste of taxpayer money.
Well, you could also argue that perhaps the current looking into the Russian collusion is a big waste of taxpayer money, but that wouldn't be the opinion of CNN. Did you hear the one kid, by the way, who said, oh, I'm being asked, why are they investigating Donald Trump and the campaign? Maybe they just don't like him, so they're just trying to make up a case. I'm surprised they let that on the air. That probably was not the answer they were looking for. But I wanted to give that little girl a high five. Way to go, girlfriend. You're onto something. Keep thinking like that. Then they go on. Listen to cut two.
What do you think the best thing Donald Trump has done so far?
Lower the taxes.
Yeah, well, he's been talking about that, but he hasn't done it yet. But you think it's a good promise?
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing he's done so far is promising to lower taxes, because I don't want to be 80 paying $1 million for taxes.
How much you want to pay when you're 80?
Not much.
No? Give me an amount.
Maybe like $100.
I like her. Let's vote for her for president. She's going to lower taxes to $100. I want to pay $100 in taxes when I'm 80. In a year's time, wouldn't that be great? Only $100. Maybe we can consolidate all the taxes we have to pay, the sales tax and the property tax and all the other taxes that they're soaking us on all the time, and just reduce it to one lump fee of $100. See, these kids are pretty smart sometimes. Then they go on to talk about what the kids don't like about Donald Trump. This is interesting. Cut three.
What don't you like about what he's done so far?
Building the wall is a bad idea. Because what if someone was like in Mexico and stayed there for a couple years, and when the wall was built, they won't be able to get back home?
Building the walls, because people from Mexico might want to go back to the United States.
Okay. Isn't it interesting to consider that President Trump has not built the wall? He has not built the wall. These kids, as 9-year-olds, are speaking to the best of their knowledge and the best of their ability at the tender age of 9, because they hear a lot of stuff on the news, no doubt, about the wall, build the wall, build the wall, we don't want the wall. And you hear about the protests and so forth, but he hasn't built the wall. And you don't hear the CNN anchor jumping in and saying, actually, he hasn't built the wall. They're not building the wall. There's no wall at this point. They're not going forward with it. There's not been an agreement to build the wall. But he was quick to jump in when they were saying, oh, we like the fact that President Trump has lowered taxes. Oh, wait a minute, kids. I must correct you. President Trump has not lowered taxes. He's talked about it. So how come, CNN anchor, you jump in to correct what they like, but when they don't like something and the something they don't like has never even occurred, why don't you jump in to correct them on that? Just wondering. Here's the final cut. This is the best one. This is cut four.
So Donald Trump gave a graduation speech. I want you to watch this and then we'll talk about it.
No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly.
It's not true, because he said mean stuff about Barack Obama, that he was born in Africa, but that wasn't true because he was born in the United States.
Maybe Donald Trump is hurting deep down inside and needs to get it out. Do any of you think that's maybe true?
Yes.
Do any of you feel sorry for him?
Yes.
Does anybody at CNN ask leading questions of young children? Yes, 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 they do. What was that? So he's making a quote about, no one has been treated more unfairly than I have as president of the United States. Oh, don't you think that we should feel sorry for Donald Trump? Do you think he's hurting down deep inside? What in the world is that? Well, it seems to me, just from a cursory glance, that it's an attempt to pathologize the president in the minds of young Americans, which I think is exploitation of the highest order. And I think it's disgusting, frankly. And by the way, CNN is the same network that during the Obama years gathered together a group of kids who were singing a song about the glories of healthcare reform. Do you remember that? I couldn't quite get that because the YouTube feed of it was a really bad recording, so I couldn't play it for you. But you might remember that. Oh, and you might remember this. Cut five. Now, do you think if the kids at Swiftwater Elementary School all of a sudden broke into a chant of Donald J. Trump, CNN would play that and laud the kids for being good, patriotic Americans? Somehow, I don't think so. I don't really think a bunch of conservative kids would probably get on CNN and earn praise. In fact, I think you probably would have everybody at CNN really criticizing that as exploiting children. See, it's only exploiting children, apparently, when you are having them talk about the person you don't like. But if it's somebody that you worship, like Barack Obama, then they can sing chants and make up songs about healthcare reform and offer their opinions on the guy you don't like and get it completely wrong. And then you just hail them and ask them leading questions about the mental capacity of the president. It's so low, I don't know how you get much lower. You always can get much lower at CNN. And I'm laughing out of sheer, I don't know, exhaustion, probably sheer exhaustion. This is the state of journalism. And these people actually think that they are serious journalists. I understand it's hard with a 24/7 cable news channel to find hard hitting, great journalism to fill every single minute of every single day, around the clock, every day of the week and every week of the year. But at the same time, you have to have principles. And if you don't have principles, then you get the whooping that they got on social media for airing that story from a lot of people who said, oh, great, woke 9-year-olds. That's terrific, CNN. Great hard-hitting journalism. It's just not. It's just not. In our hands, the Battle for Jerusalem in select theaters for a one-night event tonight, Tuesday, May 23rd. Theater and ticket information available at inourhands1967.com. Thanks a lot for joining us here on Janet Mefford today. Lord willing, we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot for listening.